Contract payment considerations. Contracts need to specify payment terms in ways that address each party's risk appropriately and provide incentives for desired payment timing. One type of payment method, a letter of credit, is discussed, since this is a common method for international transactions. Also discussed here are how to address contracts that use foreign currencies. Payment terms. In any trade or financial transaction, there is a risk that the other party, the counterparty, will fail to honor the terms of the agreement. This is called counterparty risk. The seller always runs the risk that the buyer won't pay on time or won't pay at all or will pay, but in counterfeit currency. Just as the buyer risks taking delivery of inferior goods or no goods at all, organizations need to specify payment terms in contracts with suppliers or customers. The ISCM Supply Chain Dictionary defines payment terms as conditions surrounding payment for a sale, providing a time frame in which a customer can pay without late penalties or additional fees. The payment terms may also specify an optional early payment deadline that would trigger a discount for the customer. C. Terms and conditions. These terms specify when payment is due, whether shipment will occur before or after payment is made, and the method of payment that is required. Very few transactions, domestically or cross-border, are financed by payment in advance or cash on delivery, COD, although both do occur generally if the parties are closely related, as in the case of subsidiaries, or if one party is well-established and the other unknown. For example, a well-established industrial HVAC supplier requires all sales be paid in full by wire transfer prior to arranging a shipment. However, for established mutual relationships, trade credit or an open account is often extended, which is essentially an unsecured, trust-based transaction between the parties. Trade credit is the sale of goods or services in which payment is not due right away. Trade credit encourages sales because it is effectively offering free financing over the payment period. The buyer has time to convert the good or service into revenue before making payment. With an open account, a buyer has a credit limit with the organization or a bank and can place orders or write drafts up to the limit to pay for goods or services on receipt or on a deferred basis. When an open account is with the organization, it is synonymous with trade credit. Trade credit and open accounts are offered only to trading partners with good credit records and healthy financials. For example, financial ratios and reports, because of the possibility of default. In addition to providing a deadline for payment without penalties, many organizations offer a discount to encourage early payment. For example, payment terms of 1/10 net 30 mean that the buying organization will receive a 1% discount if payment is made within 10 days, but has up to 30 days to make the full net payment with no late penalties. An organization's accounts payable or treasury personnel can calculate whether taking a discount is worth more or less than the ability to wait longer to make the payment. Similarly, the invoicing organization's finance professionals will craft any discount to make financial sense for the organization. Nearly equivalent either way, with a small tip in the direction they want the buyer to choose. Documentation for domestic business-to-business customers usually includes an invoice and a bill of lading, B/L. Invoicing internationally has far greater documentation requirements, in addition to requiring that payment be made in some secure manner, such as a letter of credit. Letters of credit. Since trade credit or an open account may not offer the risk protection that either party desires in an international transaction, organizations need a more sophisticated form of payment, and in many import-export transactions, this takes the form of a letter of credit, L/C. The letter of credit, illustrated in Exhibit 3-17, offers security from counterparty risk in a tidy but complicated package. Exhibit 3-17, letter of credit. A letter of credit is just what its name implies. A letter in which a bank assures the seller that the buyer can pay the purchase price of the goods and that the bank will therefore honor the buyer's checks to the seller up to that amount. The bank makes this assurance either because it has reason to believe that the buyer's credit is good or because the buyer has an account with the bank. The sequence of events goes something like the following. Note that the use of two banks instead of just one in this example makes this an example of a confirmed L/C. When just one bank is used, it is an unconfirmed L/C, which has a little more risk. L/C is issued. After agreeing to the terms of sale, the buyer/importer goes to its bank and gets a letter of credit demonstrating that the bank has faith in the buyer/importer's ability to pay the purchase price. Seller's bank is notified. The buyer's bank notifies the seller's bank that the L/C has been issued. This assures the seller's bank that it can honor drafts from the seller up to the amount of the purchase price as long as the bank receives the proper documentation. Seller ships cargo. Confident of receiving payment when the goods have arrived as specified, the seller has the cargo shipped. The carrier sends a B/L, or waybill for air carriage, to the seller's bank. Seller asks its banker for money. After shipping the cargo, the seller sends a draft for the purchase price to its banker, who now has the seller's draft plus the carrier's B/L. Seller's bank asks buyer's banker for money. The seller's bank forwards the documents to the buyer's bank. The B/L from the carrier usually assigns ownership of the goods to the buyer's bank, not directly to the buyer. This provides the bank with some security since it can wait to release the ownership documents to the buyer until it is sure of being repaid. Buyer's bank waits for cargo, perhaps. When the buyer's bank receives a draft and B/L, or waybill, from the seller's bank, the cargo may still be en route if it has been shipped by marine carrier. Therefore, the drafts may be payable at some future date rather than immediately. Payment may or may not depend upon the buyer's officially taking delivery of the cargo. Everyone gets paid at the time specified, say, when the buyer approves the cargo and accepts delivery, all outstanding drafts are honored. The buyer pays its banker. Its banker pays the seller's banker. The seller's banker pays the seller. The order may not be quite so neat. This is a credit transaction, after all, and some level of trust may be involved. The deal can break down at this point. For example, an unethical buyer might refuse to accept delivery and leave the cargo sitting on the wharf while attempting to negotiate a better price with the seller, who cannot afford to ship the goods back home. In some cases, payment is due before the buyer takes possession. The contract can specify a grace period if the goods turn out to be damaged, substandard, or otherwise unacceptable. The buyer may reject the shipment and is at risk of not getting a refund and having to write the whole deal off on its taxes. Although the L/C is the standard method of financing international trade, other methods are used on occasion, such as trade credit or an open account. In addition, a buyer might pay in advance, taking on the greatest amount of risk. And in a consignment transaction, goods are shipped for resale, say, from one division of a company to another division in a foreign country. Exhibit 3-18 provides a real-world example of tracking both the physical flow of exported goods and the physical or electronic document trail that accompanies the goods from purchase order on the left to receipt at the final destination on the right. Note the unexpected events at the bottom. It's not always smooth sailing in global trade. Exhibit 3-18. Export processes, administrative and physical. Source: BISF. Currency issues. Just as cargo can sometimes be tripped up at a border crossing, so can payments have their difficulties getting from one country to the next. As can information, for that matter. In multi-currency situations, the buyer and the seller both may experience currency exchange risk, a risk caused by the fluctuating rate of exchange between their two currencies. A buyer might make a commitment to pay the equivalent of 200,000 euros to a Japanese seller, who, of course, wants yen, not euros, and actually wind up paying, say, 215,000 euros when trading the euro for yen to make the payment. If, on the other hand, the yen were to weaken against the euro, the buyer would get, in effect, a discounted price. Impact of currency selection. Organizations have some leeway under accounting rules to select the primary currency with which they conduct the bulk of their transactions, called their home currency for accounting purposes, and this can minimize the total amount of foreign exchange that is needed. They can also maintain foreign currency bank accounts to buy and sell in the same currencies as their trading partners, thus avoiding the need for foreign exchange. Of course, the value of the funds in these accounts will fluctuate for accounting purposes, but such accounts do avoid foreign exchange fees. These tactics can work well for the major currencies of the world. Organizations tend to avoid working with currencies that have less established trading markets. Currency exchange risk creates operating exposure for an organization, which the ISCM Supply Chain Dictionary defines as the risk introduced by flexible exchange rates when operating in the global environment, including their effect on production, storage, and buying and selling prices. Thus, currency exchange risk affects not only the effective prices for supplies and for sales to customers, but also operating and storage costs and inventory value. The accounting value of one's inventory will fluctuate if it is produced and valued in the currency of a country that isn't the organization's home currency. In such cases, the value of the assets will be adjusted up or down for financial reporting purposes to account for the exchange rates between the countries. This can, in turn, positively or negatively impact the organization's financial ratios and thus its market value, for example, stock price, and ability to access credit. The key problem with this type of risk is that it creates volatility while the organization's owners or lenders desire stability. Often they are willing to trade away the upside of a given currency fluctuation to also limit the downside. In other cases, they are willing to pay significant fees to limit this volatility. Methods to limit volatility are called hedging, and it is called currency hedging when applied to foreign currency transactions. Currency hedging. If you aren't dealing in the same currency as your counterparty in an import-export transaction, you have to find ways of making or collecting a payment with minimal risk. One technique is currency hedging, which is used to offset the risks associated with the changing value of currency. An array of financial products can be used toward this end, including forwards, futures, swaps, and options. The most common tool used in currency hedging is currency futures, in which one party agrees to buy/sell a fixed amount of a given currency at a fixed exchange rate on a fixed date in the future. Futures are traded on organized exchanges or clearinghouses. These third parties reduce counterparty risk by serving as intermediaries to both buyer and seller. Currency hedging is not always available, but it is readily found in the major currencies of the world economy. While most large corporations now have entire departments devoted solely to hedging and risk management, small companies often lack the resources necessary to engage in currency hedging. In this case, a broker/dealer organization can perform these services for a fee. Note that currency hedging can result in large losses if poorly managed, so the process needs experts as well as expert oversight.